Welcome to Internet Aesthetic, a podcast about the internet, aesthetics, culture, and media. We are two Vietnamese American women who live in a society, and we're here to analyze it. Grab a snack and hang out with us. Today, we want to talk about money. Specifically, we want to examine the ways in which media influence us and we influence media to shape our relationship with buying things.
I think I was recommended on YouTube Zoe Pritchard, or maybe you told me about her.
I think we both saw her on our feeds at the same time.
Yeah, we probably get very similar recommendations.
Yeah.
But yeah, she is like this small YouTuber who kind of like does videos about her life and like her financial habits and stuff like that. Like she does, I think, monthly or weekly videos of like what she's been spending money on and how she's like tracking or not tracking her finances. And it's been really interesting because she's very real. She doesn't hide all the negative things or like what people would consider are negative. Like, I think I was watching a video where she was like, yeah, I racked up like $6,000 on my credit cards. And I was like, are you insane?
Being unemployed too.
Yeah. You know, I was like, she could like be like attacked for that a lot. But I found that in the comments, people are generally supportive. They're like, you need to track your spending. They're like very kind. Nobody's like, are you dumb? But so that's nice. I think it's really cool that she's being honest because I feel like that's the reality for a lot of people. They don't really know how to control their spending. And so it's also just something that I've been thinking about a lot because when I moved into my apartment, I was spending a lot of money like furnishing my apartment and I felt really bad about it. Like every time at the end of the month when I was also like looking at how much I had been spending, it was always like way too much money. And I felt really bad, but yeah.
Same. I think the beginning of the year is always like a cold shower for a lot of people and their spending, like especially from holiday spending.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why she was recommended to the both of us. So when you brought up this topic idea, I thought this episode is going to be less research heavy. Like we do bring in some, you know, like articles that we've read that were interesting or some YouTube videos. But for the most part, I thought it'd just be really interesting to talk about our personal relationship with finance. And
yeah, I feel like talking about money is kind of taboo.
Right.
Sometimes yeah. Like people don't really talk to each other about like their spending habits or like their how much money they're spending and things like that, because it feels kind of crass to be like, oh, I just spent this much money. And it feels a little bit like you're bragging sometimes, maybe, or you don't want people to shame you for buying whatever.
Yeah.
Like we're not here to be like, oh, you should never buy anything ever again. You know, like I also get recommended a lot of these like super minimalist people. And I'm kind of like, it looks so depressing because they're always, like, in an empty room. There's like nothing in there. And I'm like, how do you live like this? It's so sad. You know, we love our stuff. We love looking at stuff. We love thinking about buying stuff. We want you to do the things that like make you happy. And if that means, you know, buying things now and then, like we're all for that. We're thinking about like how to be more careful or like considerate about the things that we buy or bring into our lives.
Exactly. What will bring you net happiness in the long run? We're not going to tell you, you know, you should spend money on experiences over things. Like, and rather than focusing on like that dichotomy of like saving versus spending, I think we're going to cover mostly consuming versus conserving. And it's like up to you to determine the balance of that and like how that will bring you the most happiness in the long run.
Yeah. I guess like the first thing that we can talk about is lifestyle creep, feeling like you need to keep up with other people in your life. I think that was the first video that I watched from Zoe Pritchard was her lifestyle creep video, and how when she started making more money, she felt like she needed to like buy more things to like keep up to a new standard of living, or like she felt like because she had more money, she could spend more. That was really interesting, and like I really related to that.
Yeah, to define lifestyle creep, like you covered it perfectly. It's just incrementally increasing like your spending and your budget relative to your income increases. And so like the most prominent example of lifestyle creep is usually like your housing. Living at home or with roommates is acceptable when you're making a minimum wage. And then once you start making like $50,000 a year, then you move into a studio. And then once you start making like $1 million a year, you move into a mansion. And so style creep usually comes into play when people are regretful or they lament not having enough savings after making these like cost increases. And yeah, like it's creep because like it creeps up on you like when you least expect it, because it just feels so natural and normal to buy like the little things here and there that then amount to like a completely different lifestyle.
I feel like if I were to get a pay raise, I would feel like, oh, I deserve to be able to like increase my spending budget each month because, you know, I have more money now. But do I actually need more stuff just because I make more money? When I moved into my apartment and I got to determine what I wanted my space to be like, I actually, when I got my new job and moved into the apartment, I actually made a lot more than I did at my previous job. And so I felt like I could afford to like buy nicer things to have a nicer apartment. I justified it to myself by telling myself that like if I bought the more expensive thing that I actually like, and like it'll be like better quality, so I'll be able to keep it like around longer, it like would be something that I would keep for longer instead of buying something that was cheaper and something that I didn't like as much that I would immediately get rid of as soon as I could actually afford what I really wanted. So in my head I was like, I'm kind of saving money because I'd probably buy this thing that I really want down the line anyway, so I might as well just buy it now. And like, I don't regret getting any of my stuff. Like, I love all of it, but there are definitely a few things that I bought that I'm kind of like, do I really need that? Like, right this minute? Like, couldn't it have waited? Like, I almost bought this super cute purple coffee table because I really wanted like a space to like do arts and crafts that wasn't just like my desk. And like, I wanted a place like for when like you and Andrew come over that we could like all hang around and eat and stuff. But I ended up waiting because I wanted to see how it would feel when I got back to my apartment, because I was thinking about this during the holidays and I was like at home with my family. I felt like I needed to wait until I got back to my apartment and really like looked at my space and measured things out. And I realized it was like too big. And also like, you guys almost never come over. You guys come over like once in a while. So it doesn't really make sense to get. And I had to be like realistic and tell myself like, how often are you going to spend time at this coffee table instead of like at your desk watching YouTube videos?
We're at this point now where before, when we were making less, every dollar that we made, like it either went towards something essential or savings or like working toward a goal of like moving out. But now like we actually have the option of buying like the purple table or buying like the equivalent, something like kind of extravagant, but you can't afford it. And I feel like I enable you so much. I was like, oh, Lisa totally deserves that. I remember when you told me about that. I was like, Lisa works so hard. Like, that'd be so cute. She deserves it because she's awesome. And
I was telling Jenny, I was like, I talked to Issa about things that I want to buy when I really want to get them, because I know she's going to tell me to get them. And I talk to Jenny when I need someone to be like, you don't fucking need that.
I am the devil on your shoulder.
I also watch like a lot of interior design YouTubers, and they always have these like beautiful spaces. They're like super like hip and trendy and millennial. I really, really want my apartment to look like that, but I have to remind myself that it's not practical or worthwhile for me, because I don't know if I'm still gonna be here. I think my lease ends in like 5 or 6 months. I don't know if I'm gonna be here. Is it really worth it to paint my wall when I'm gonna move out soon and then have to like repaint it again? That's money that could be spent on boba. something that does bring me true happiness. Or like something that I actually need. There was like an entryway like style makeover thing, and they put like this little entryway table, and like I've always liked the idea of an entryway table, and it's something that like I think about a lot, but I have to keep telling myself like, you walk through your entryway, you don't spend any time there. What are you gonna put on an entryway table? You have like nothing. I feel like once you get an entryway table, you also have to get decor to put on the entryway table. Like, it's all just like builds.
You need the mirror, you need the pampas grass, you need like the little catch-all dish, you need.
Yeah, you need like little shelves and stuff. I mean, like, that for me, it personally doesn't make sense for me to like make over my entryway. Or like, I've also thought about doing my bathroom, but I also don't spend that much time in my bathroom. It's not like I'm gonna sit there and like stare at like my beautiful wallpaper or something. Like, I guess it's just like thinking about the things that you actually need versus the things that would like look good but don't have any practical practical purpose. Like, another thing is, like, when I know that, like, a lot of YouTubers, like, you know, they always are, like, talking about baskets. Like, that's, like, a huge thing, right? It's like, oh, you should always put your stuff into, like, cute baskets so it looks better. And I have, like, these empty shelves in my bathroom that, like, I definitely could be putting baskets there, but I also don't have anything to put in them. So
buying those things, it's okay, like, when you've met your savings goals, for example. Like, you've already saved for retirement. You've already, like, you already have an emergency fund. Like, why not, like, live a little? But then it's hard to know, like, when you've had enough in those areas. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can go over my lifestyle creep experience.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much spending every dollar that I made when I was in college. I think any college kid just works odd jobs that makes, like, enough for fun money, but, like, not enough really to save anything meaningful. And I remember my spending was the most reckless when I moved to LA. I went to LA for grad school, and that's, like, my worst lifestyle creep incident, because my income increased very marginally from, like, the odd jobs I was working in undergrad to the odd jobs I was working in grad school. But, like, suddenly the lifestyle that I wanted, it was so much more expensive than what I was living at Berkeley. All of a sudden, all of my coworkers and all of my friends in LA just had, like, the most stylish, trendy clothes, and they had perfect makeup, and they got blowouts, and they did their nails. And I remember feeling like, wow, the standard of beauty in LA is just so different from the Bay Area, and, like, Berkeley specifically. And I remember when I went to work in West Hollywood, literally making $13 an hour. I know for a fact my full-time coworkers were making, like, no more than $20 an hour, and yet all of, like, the coffee shops around us and all of just, like, the lunch spots would just sell, like, ridiculously overpriced food that we just bought anyway because that's what was available. Like, I remember buying $10 lattes and $20 smoothies because that was just, it was just there. And, like, I don't know, just thinking back, like, damn, one smoothie cost me, like, half a day's work sometimes. Which is so shitty. And, like, LA made me believe that spending money on, like, sample sales or Lyft rides to rooftop bars was the pinnacle of happiness. And I don't know, I feel like you have to have a lot of mental fortitude to resist, like, the current of your environment sometimes in that way. Mm-hmm. Being frugal in LA can be done. But honestly, like, moving back to the Bay Area and, like, moving back home was the most important thing for my financial health, like, at that time. So, like, yeah, I guess it's not true lifestyle creep in that, like, I didn't really make that much more money, but I got a taste of what, like, my life could be like if, like, I really did allow myself to that level. Mm-hmm. And same as you, like, when I actually got a full-time job and I moved out on my own and lived in an apartment, I don't know, I'm, like, a fucking yappy now. I literally moved into, like, a luxury condo with two bedrooms, and now that I make, like, so much more money than I did when I was, like, making $13 an hour, I've allowed myself little luxuries here and there, like, I don't know, buying a really fancy desk, or, like, especially with the pandemic and we're not going out as much, I, like, made excuses for myself to buy things to make my home feel better, mm-hmm. like, buying a couch and buying, like, a really large dining table and just, like, all the things that I felt like I kind of needed to be comfortable and, like, kind of live at the level I felt like I deserved.
Yeah.
But now that, like, things have opened up and, like, we've started hanging out more, like, outside, all of these necessities that I was budgeting for, like, are now turning into, like, we're gonna take a pottery class, which is totally fulfilling and awesome, but it is, like, you know, $300. And, like,
yeah.
So I feel like I don't have, like, an active desire to keep up with, like, specific influencers or people, but, like, I have this aspirational self that, like, I feel like I can actualize if I buy the right things. Mm-hmm. I want to be that girl who has an aesthetic apartment and, like, a social life, and so I feel like that's really driven a lot of my purchases lately.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, like, when you look at, like, YouTubers and influencers and you see how amazing their lives are, mm-hmm. even, like, YouTubers who are kind of living, like, more regular lives, like, it yeah. still looks amazing because they have, like, these picture kitchens and, like, super cozy living rooms and stuff, and you're like, I really, really want that. I was, like, thinking about it, and, like, I felt, like, really bad about how much I was spending, and I was looking back, and I was, like, honestly, a lot of it was just tied to, like, getting stuff for my apartment, most of which
right, yeah.
I needed. But there were some things where I was kind of like, did you really need to get that, like, my rug that costs, like, $800? But it's beautiful, and I don't regret it. I regret it a little bit. But I don't know, like, it's definitely something that I'm going to keep for as long as it's intact. I don't know, it makes me happy every time I look at it.
Yeah.
The point is, a lot of my expenses were tied to my apartment. And now that I'm basically done with, like, my apartment, I could probably put up more art and stuff. Like, my walls are pretty bare. But, like, other than that, I've definitely, like, reeled back on my spending. And I'm not purchasing that much more anymore. Like, I'm a lot more intentional about what I want to get now that I'm done.
Yeah, you have, like, the baseline. And now we can afford to not spend as much.
But like, remember when Open Spaces had that sale on their shoe racks?
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced that, like, lavender color. I, like, showed it to you because you, like, really liked purple. And we were both like, oh, we really want this. But you already had an Open Spaces shoe rack.
I had the same exact thing, but in blue. I did not need the exact same thing in purple.
You already had one, and I couldn't justify spending that much money on one. And I was like, I don't even know where I'm going to put it. And so ultimately, I was like, I'm not going to get it. I don't need it. And like, I managed to just be like, it's fine. Like, your life will be fine without that shoe rack. But then Issa got it for me for Christmas, and I literally was like jumping for joy. When I saw it, I was like, I screamed, and I was like so excited. I was like, this is like the happiest day of my life.
I remember that so clearly. I like teared up a little because I heard like your squeal as you kind of like unveiled it, and then it just got louder and louder as it's something what it was.
And I made space for it, and it's like, it makes me happy every time I look at it because it's a reminder of Issa.
Oh.
I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I felt rewarded for not buying one somehow, I guess. Another thing that, like, I talked to Issa about before we recorded this episode was just about, like, how I'm personally influenced by the people around me. I'm influenced by you. Like, whenever I come over to your apartment, I'm always, like, in awe of, like, how beautiful it is and all the things that you have. Like, it's a beautiful apartment.
Oh, thank you.
I have a friend who's, like, super fashionable, and, like, I always, like, really admire her outfits and stuff. And, like, I want to look like that. But, like, I don't, like, have any ill feelings towards either of you for, like, the things that you have, because you guys obviously deserve everything that you have. But, you know, I was like, oh, I really want these things. I would, like, think about getting them, but I also couldn't justify them for my own self. It was, like, a little hard because, like, I wanted all these nice things, but they didn't make sense for my own life or my own space. I needed to tell myself, you guys make significantly more money. You guys both live in, like, dual income households, so you guys can afford these things. Whereas, like, I'm living on my own. I don't make that much money. Just being more realistic about what I can afford and what I really want, you know? Like, do I just want these things because I see you guys have it? Versus, like, do I actually, like, want them?
I really appreciated your vulnerability in telling me that, Lisa. I know it's, like, really hard to share, like, between friends.
Yeah.
I'm influenced by you, too, honestly. I think, like, it's just because our tastes are so similar. And, yeah, it's always good to, like, take a step back and actually realize, like, is this what I want? Or I'm just seeing it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I got the same desk as you.
It's a very nice desk.
It's a very nice desk. But, yeah, you're right. Did I need this desk? Probably not. I had one. And now I turned it into an entryway table, which I did not need either. Thank you for sharing that, Lisa. I hope you all can be honest with your friends, too, about these money matters. And on that note, in this next part, we wanted to talk about generally how media outlets, like specifically YouTube for me, influence our buying habits.
The original idea for this episode was because this was probably around the holidays that I like put this into like our little notion as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was because I kept seeing a lot of like, oh, these are 10 things you need to get from Amazon, or like, these are the things that you need to get for Christmas. Or like, there's also a lot of TikToks that are like, oh, buy this from Amazon, or don't buy this from Amazon. And it's like, do you really need these things? I get that on a certain level, it's just like clickbait, and it's just about what gets people to like look at their video. They're not saying you actually need those things, or I don't know, maybe they do genuinely believe that you like need these things in your life. But every time like I look at like videos where there's like, oh, you need these things, I almost never need any of it.
It is nice to have. Why this kind of content is being created is because it's just an easy format for content creators to make money. Like, if you're a YouTuber who makes productivity videos, like a super easy way to monetize in that video is to then get like Amazon affiliate links and then just do a quick like 10 things that you need to like enhance your productivity productivity, including like tools and gadgets and whatnot, like subscriptions. I feel like that's probably like one of the most common reasons why those videos are made. I don't know, do they actually want to recommend these things? Maybe, but if that wasn't really an incentive for them to monetize, like I don't think we'd be seeing as many videos like that.
I remember when the sunset lamp was like super popular on like TikTok and Instagram reels. I really like how it looks, but when I was thinking about buying it, it was always like super cheap. The reviews were like, oh, this like broke immediately. Do I need this? And then like I showed it to Jenny. She's like, this is stupid. I'm like, go outside and get some real sun.
Voice of reason.
It's just like you see what other people have and like you really want that. Like I think I really like watching apartment tours because it kind of gives me inspiration for my own space. But then like I see what other people have and I'm like, damn, that's really cool. Like I really want something like that.
I also wanted the sunset lamp. It's like just like these short-lived fads that seem kind of cool and like photograph well, to be honest, but in practicality it's like, does this actually make me happier day to day, like in my house? And it's just like more stuff to have. Those kinds of videos or like TikToks, like that specific format of like 10 things you need to buy or like X number of things you need to buy, like they're pretty appealing to me, or at least I click on them because I feel like I'm pretty conscious of what I buy, like of where I put my dollars. And so like I want to know if I'm making a mistake or not, and like so I can save some money. And so I feel like sometimes I watch them just to like inform myself as like research, and also to know what new products are out there. And like,
yeah,
this is like especially true for like kitchen gadgets or like furniture, you know, top 10 rugs to buy. Like it's so hard to find a rug. Like I want to know what materials to look out for or like what brands to watch out for. The irony of it is that I watch these videos with the intention of saving money and like buying quality things, but then I end up spending more money than I would have like buying things that they recommend that I wouldn't have bought in the first place.
It can be useful because sometimes you only know like a certain number of like brands or like products, and they might introduce something to you that's like better quality or, you know, something that you weren't aware of. So I can see the appeal. I got the Fellow kettle. I probably because of an ad that I saw, like I kept seeing it over and over. I was like, that's really beautiful. And I saw it a lot in like other YouTuber spaces and influencer spaces. And I was like, I want that. And then I got it. Like, honestly, it's really good.
It's really good.
Not an ad.
Not sponsor, we wish. Okay, this is a tangent. I mean, we're both in interior design spaces. Like, I follow, like, Arvin Alano and, like, Kiva and all those different, like, interior design YouTubers. And for the most part, I feel like they all say the same thing. Like, they all recommend similar stuff and they all have similar tastes. And I've already started to create, like, a hierarchy in my brain from what I've learned from them of, like, what's good taste and what's bad taste, or, like, what's good interior design and what's not. Mm-hmm. And that hierarchy goes, Scandinavian and contemporary designs are the best, and then like boho and glam like suck and like they're juvenile. Mm-hmm. And when I think about like what I want in like my space, I found that I definitely had like Paige Wassel's voice in the back of my head going like, arches are super ugly, never buy anything with an arch. And I want to like in the end create a space that feels me and not like what other people deem as like good and bad. And also like what concerns me is that like just with the nature of any like artistic channel, Arvin Alano, he always recommends products that he says are really great, and then like literally 3 months later he gets rid of those products and he just replaces it with something different. To be fair, I think he gets a lot of products for free or very discounted, but I bought the Value couch because he recommended it and he said it was a really good couch, and now he got rid of that couch and he said actually he didn't like it and he has like a newer, cooler, like more expensive couch. Yeah, it just was a really big wake-up call to me to not just subscribe to the narrative that they're peddling as like what is good design and what's not, because in the end like they all say it themselves, like they're not experts, like they're not tastemakers, they're just sharing their opinion, and I need to like treat them as that, like they are opinions.
Yeah, I like your couch though.
Thanks, Lisa. I like it too.
I feel like it's also, I guess if we're talking about being influenced by trends, because there was a time when boho was in.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's overdone, and so it's like tired and out. This is just like interior design, which does move a little bit slower, but like even in fashion, which moves so much more faster, like if you're always trying to keep up with the latest trends, you're just gonna end up spending like way too much money for clothes, or like if you're into like interior design for furniture, that with fashion in like a few weeks, or like in with interior design in like a few years, it's just gonna be out, and then you have just like wasted that money on stuff that you like. Did you you really like it? Or was it just because it was popular and you were swayed?
And, like, maybe you did like it at the time, but then, like, what does that say about the money that you spent on it? Or, like, now it's sitting in a landfill or, like, in a Goodwill.
Yeah. I bought this, like, rattan chair from Urban Outfitters that's, like, very boho. And, like, I love that chair.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I love looking at it. I love sitting in it. It's, like, fairly comfortable. It's not, like, the most comfortable thing. It's good. It's fun to sit in. But I do worry that, like, in 5 years, am I still gonna like it? I hope so. I think even if I didn't like it, I wouldn't get rid of it, just because my mindset is like, if it's still usable, why would you throw it out?
Right, like in our parents' homes, they've had the same furniture for like 30 years. They take their furniture from place to place. It has like its own quality, even if it's not necessarily in style anymore. It means something to you after all those years. To touch more on being influenced by YouTuber or media, like I mentioned earlier, I'm in my yappy phase and I've been very influenced by this idea of stepping into my ideal self and like my best self. And that girl has a skincare routine. She has a really good workstation. She has like a cohesive aesthetic. And so I personally seek out a lot of content like how to find your personal style, or like here's my desk tour and like all the products I use to have like a really minimalist desk, or we've been talking about like interior design mistakes so I can make my home really nice.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, yes, like media is influential and people will sometimes attribute a lot of power to media and as if like we're just passively consuming it and being influenced by it. But I am definitely seeking out this content and like it comes from like an intention when I make that search. And so because I've noticed that and like noticed my increase in like shopping, I'm trying to combat that by consuming more media, specifically media that makes me feel ashamed to buy things. For example, I'll watch minimalism videos, stuff like how to live well with less, or like 10 things I never buy, or like tiny apartment tour and how I make do with less space.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like an easy fix right now. And later on, we'll talk about ways we can manage our spending.
Oh, like how to have a healthier relationship.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess like media can work in many different ways. When I first learned about fast fashion and just how awful it is for the planet and people and like human rights issues, I really had this conviction that the only way to really stop this and to bring the humanitarian issues to light is if we convince people through media that their consumption habits really matter. And I thought about that back in college, and I feel like my hypothesis was sort of right. The sustainable fashion movement exploded on YouTube. I feel like almost everyone now is aware of like what sustainable and ethical fashion is. And it even got like some brands to take responsibility for their carbon footprint and just how much they pay their employees. But I think in the end, sustainable and ethical consumption is still consumption. And I know like these companies, they only like marginally invest more in sustainability and like in ethical practices. So pros and cons to everything. Like even if you really try your best to do the right thing, maybe even buy less or buy the right thing, like there is no good consumption under capitalism in the end.
I guess because like even sustainable fashion companies, they still want you to buy their stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, they're still going to put out ads. They're still going to sponsor influencers to share their products. And yeah, buying their products is better than buying from like Amazon, but like it's still like a part of the noise.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect of our relationship with money, I guess, is this idea of retail therapy. I love the idea of retail therapy, even though you should probably go to real therapy. But I don't know, it's like obviously an instantaneous dopamine rush, like when you click add to cart and buy now and check out or whatever, you're like, oh yeah, I just like have something coming to me in the mail or whatever. And then you like get to have the thing, you get to like open your box, have the thing that you bought in your house or in your closet. It's like a really good feeling.
It's a present to yourself.
Yeah. I feel like we sometimes tend to push this idea of retail therapy, like whenever anything bad happens, we're like, oh, well, let's go shopping and like feel better about ourselves. I'm super guilty of this because whenever something bad happens to me or like my friends, I'm like, let's go shopping, let's go buy the thing that we want.
Or even like, oh, let's go out to eat, like let's get a dessert.
Yeah.
Let's buy something to make ourselves feel good.
It ties into like the treat yourself thing.
Yeah, for my retail therapy, it always comes after the fact. So sometimes I'll just like buy a bunch of shit and then come up with an excuse later by saying something like, well, I was just celebrating this. Two nights ago, Lisa and I went to this beautiful bar in downtown Oakland called Viridian. We planned for it. We knew it was coming up, but it was still super expensive. And I remember feeling so bad about drinking my like $18 drink that I only drank half of and Lisa finished the other half. And like telling the table like, okay, well, we're out here to celebrate today. That's why we're spending this money. Like what are we celebrating, guys? I felt like I had to come up with something.
It was a good experience though.
It was great. I don't regret it.
Yeah. I want to go back.
Yeah. I will budget for this, Lisa. Our monthly Viridian trip.
It was like stupid expensive, but it was just a really nice environment. Like your drink was really good. My drink was okay.
I liked your drink a lot.
Oh, really? Yeah. I felt like mine was like super sweet.
Yeah. That's why I liked it.
But yeah. I don't know. I thought it was fun. And because like we planned for it in advance and like I knew it was coming. And so like I budgeted for it. I didn't feel guilty about like spending that much money because I knew that it was going to be a lot.
Yeah.
I know we're going to talk about like shame around spending later, but I think if you can get to like a place where, you know, you budget ahead and like you know that some expenses are coming, you can go out and have fun experiences or buy like really nice things without feeling guilty because you're not overspending. You're spending within your means. You planned for this.
That's actually a tip that another YouTuber I watched recommended. It was a video about lifestyle inflation, and she mentioned how the way you can comfortably spend on random events like that one is like just allocating money ahead of time. Like, you know you're gonna spend it. It's money that you can afford to set aside. And so when you do spend it, that's it, you're just living your life. I think retail therapy can still be okay. Let's say you're having a really shitty day. You spend $5 on a candle from Target and that makes your entire night. As long as you know you're still meeting your budgeting goals, like I feel like no one should be able to take that away from you.
That's what I do with boba. It's like, if I have a shitty day, I should get some boba to feel better about my day. If I'm having like a really good day, I'm like, you know what make this day even better? Some boba. I don't even know why I really justify getting boba because honestly, even when it's like a mediocre day, it's like, let's spice it up. Get some boba.
Okay, so a lot of retail therapy is immediate gratification versus like a purchase that you make with like long-term planning in mind.
I love immediate gratification. I think like I was reading this article about the pandemic and how we're all tired, you know, we're kind of banking on like delayed gratification, you know, we're just gonna wait until the pandemic ends, but you know, this pandemic was supposed to end like 2 years ago and it's still going. There's genuinely no end in sight for us right now. I think the article is like, we're all really tired. There's no point to waiting anymore. Which my point is, we really like enjoy immediate gratification. And I think especially during the pandemic, like we're kind of tired of delayed gratification. When you're always purchasing with like immediate gratification in mind, like you want the things now. Like I don't mind immediate gratification or like buying things, but if you're not also setting aside money for your future, mm-hmm. I think then that can become a problem because 30 years down the line, when you're like thinking about retirement, you're gonna be like super bummed because you don't have any money for that.
And like statistically, you will live that long.
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh, what if I die? 80% chance that you won't. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people have this idea that you can either have one or the other. You can either be happy now or be happy later. But I feel like that mindset is very limiting because you can be happy with both. You can be frugal and like hate it and think it's like the worst thing and you're just waiting to be happy. Or you can be frugal and like really enjoy what you can't afford now and like what you already have. So another thing that I thought of when you brought up this idea was the mark of being like comfortably upper middle class is being able to buy small things that bring you immediate gratification without really worrying about it. I remember going to Target and even just buying the little things in the checkout aisle, like little packs of gum or like a magazine, the little things like that, my parents would still make me feel really bad about buying.
Yeah.
Or they would always look at the price tag no matter how small it is. And I feel like you can feel like most free and happy when like you have the financial stability to be able to do that and not like worry too much. So I don't know. I feel like it's definitely a privilege to like comfortably immediately gratify yourself.
Yeah. I have like a monthly budget for grocery shopping and I kind of know that like each week my max is like $50. But even knowing that, like, I don't think about how much things are going to cost, because I think even $50 for like one person each week is like a lot of money to spend on groceries probably. And so I very rarely like hit that anyway. And so I also just don't look at like price tags. I just like toss things into my cart. And then whenever I tell my mom, I'm like, oh yeah, I bought this and this, and she's like, how much did it cost? And I'm like, I don't know. I already tossed the receipt. Yeah, it's really bad because she does, like, I remember like going shopping with her and she does look at the prices before we even go into the checkout line. She would like start counting up how much things cost and like add it up, even though if it was a lot, like, I don't know if she ever had like a budget in mind, you know, but she would still do that. Like, she would still be like, oh yeah, this fish costs like, I don't know, I don't even know what a fish costs. Like $5 a pound or something, you know. It was honestly a little impressive how much she managed to remember all of the prices.
Dude, moms, they're so amazing in that way. And they know where the best prices are for everything. Don't go to that store for that. You always go to the store for fruit. I feel like our parents are very much so like, always plan for the future.
Yeah.
Who cares about right now?
And I feel like that's rubbed off on us when I think about how we could be spending our money. We're actually probably in the middle of like a reckless spender versus like oversaver or something. Yeah, I think we feel bad unnecessarily.
Okay, like Lisa mentioned, we feel a lot of shame around money, and that has definitely been inherited from our parents who are immigrants. We are like first generation Americans. Depending on how you look at it. What has been your experience with money shame, Lisa? Or spending shame?
I guess, like, my most relevant experience is always, like, whenever I tell my mom about something that I bought, and then I always, like, have it by whatever the actual cost was. And even then, she's like, you spent that much on, like, a bed or whatever? Like, she thinks everything that I buy is unnecessary. And so I just have this habit of, like, hiding my purchases as much as possible. Like, when I bought my armchair, I, like, did end up telling her about it, like, a month later. And she's like, why did you buy an armchair? Like, you're gonna need to, like, you're gonna move eventually. You're gonna need to bring that with you. It's gonna be so much work. And I was like, I like it. I need a place to sit. It's cute. I also bought a pendant lamp. And, like, I still haven't shown her that, actually. And it didn't cost that much, to be honest. But whenever I call her, like, video call her, I always, like, move my laptop to the side so that it's not in view. Maybe sometimes I'm like, did I really need to buy that? But I think that's just my mom's voice in my head. It all comes back to my mom.
I definitely think that scarcity mindset is very common in like Asian moms. No matter how much you have, it's never going to be enough. No matter how much money you've saved, you can always save more and you can always spend less. And that's definitely driven a lot of my shame. Like, my mom, she was super frugal growing up with me too. Well, she let me buy like any books that I wanted or anything related to school. But when it came to like makeup or clothes or like anything she considered like a luxury, she would always question me, like make sure I found like the cheapest price for things, outright returned stuff that I bought on my own because she didn't want me to be spending. I remember buying like a shirt and I told her it was like $20 and she was like, oh, you're wearing a $20 shirt. Like, and she made me like put the tag back on and like return it. But at the same time, like sometimes she would randomly let me buy something frivolous, like a new backpack in the middle of the school year, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because she grew up not having those things, like she was torn between letting me have the luxuries that she didn't get to have as a teenager, and then also ensuring like I didn't squander away all of her hard work, like as an immigrant in this country. I could see like that conflict in her mind all the time. Like, she wanted to give me everything, but she also didn't want me to be spoiled. I mentioned my friend Jen Sway earlier, but she's a life coach. Her business is called Jen Sway Coaching. She's amazing. And recently she posted some takeaways from a book that she read recently called The Soul of Money. And in her Instagram post talking about this book, she talked about how she would spend hours at the grocery store, like comparing pasta prices, like $1.50 versus like $2 pasta. And she could have been using that time for something actually useful for herself. Because in the end, like when you're done with your shopping trip, you save maybe like $10. And when you're lower income, like that means everything. But like where she is right now, she was just letting herself become like unnecessarily anxious, like for these small purchases. And she mentioned how like spending isn't necessarily always bad and saving isn't always necessarily good. There are people who save so much money and they still feel like they need more and like it's not enough and like they just are so anxious about what might happen if they don't have more.
obviously you don't want to overspend on things that you don't need, but you also don't want to like save way too much and put all this energy into like, you know, thinking about, should I save like 50 cents on pasta? If you can afford not to like really think about that. I remember when FIRE was like super popular, like financial independence, retire early or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like a YouTuber or whatever, but I remember reading maybe that somebody would just eat like beans and rice, like canned beans and rice. Like that was all they ate. And I was just like, if this is what it takes to retire early, like I don't want any part of it. Like that is such a sad life. Like you need to find balance between obviously saving money for your retirement and enjoying the life that you have. I don't know, maybe for them that's what's worth it, to like eat beans and whatever so that they can retire early and like go on vacation, you know, like maybe that's their plan. But I don't know, I would like to have a little bit of happiness every day of my life.
If you can afford that threshold of happiness that would like actually make you happy, like you should do it.
Yeah.
I think where the problem comes in is people overspending their means.
Mm-hmm. You know what this makes me think of is like another aspect of financial shaming is like around like low income people. Like I remember people always like, oh, like did you really need to get an Xbox or like a really nice phone, like when you could have saved money?
Did you need a birthday cake? Really? Like,
yeah.
You needed candles for your kid's birthday?
Like, yeah, it's just
stupid shit like that.
They're denying, like, low-income people happiness. They're like, oh, if you're poor, like, you don't deserve to, like, have these things. Or, like, you shouldn't be spending your money on these things because you should be, like, saving so you can, like, pull yourself up to, like, a higher income bracket.
Right.
When, like, the reality is, like, it doesn't really matter if you spent, like, you know, a few hundred dollars on like an Xbox, because like it's just a few hundred dollars. Like, what is that gonna do for you in the long run?
That just brings up another point, because all these people who are saying like, oh, well, you can become a millionaire if you didn't just like buy those small things. Well, you, a person who speaks English perfectly, has gone to school, like you, a person who has like family who can, you know, invest in your business or whatever, like who are you to tell a lower income person who might not have those things like they can do it too?
They're imagining like this perfect life with zero problems, like zero emergencies that obviously are inevitably going to happen. It's really frustrating. It's like an avocado toast mindset. Like you could buy a house if you didn't spend all this money on like Starbucks or avocado toast or whatever.
To round off the shaming segment, so my friend Jen also brought up how shaming yourself isn't a sustainable way to get yourself to take an action. What's sustainable is inspiring yourself. So if you really need to save money for something, if you really need to stop your spending because you can't afford your lifestyle, you have to let go of like self-flagellating mindsets like, I'm such a shitty, awful person for not having enough money in my savings. Like, I hate how I'm not like those other people I see who have their life together. Instead, it's more healthy to have a mindset that's more inspiring, like along the lines of, wow, I'm super excited to be financially free, and I'm super inspired by these people who have been able to do so. Let me learn from them.
Yeah, this is actually something Zoe Pritchard talked about, was like when she lost her job and she knew she was gonna have to like cut back on her spending. She was like, I could be really sad about not being able to like buy like nice pasta, but oh, I'm gonna turn it into a game of seeing how much I can save. That is a fun way to think about it. Is like,
yeah.
Where can you like pinch pennies and things like that?
Yeah, I love how real she is.
Yeah.
She's just like a regular person with regular desires.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, she definitely misses the mark sometimes, like any human. And
yeah. It's
inspiring to see how she bounces back from them.
Yeah.
We wanted to go over other spending tips. So Lisa, what are some of your top spending tips?
So I do have like a finance tracker, and then I started tracking my finances like 2020. And at the time, it was just about seeing how much I was spending and what I was spending it on. It wasn't necessarily about like keeping to a budget or anything. I just wanted to see where my money was going. And that was going on for a while until like I moved out on my own and having a budget became really important. And so recently I managed to create a budget tracker that's actually been really helpful in seeing how much money I have left, because I had set a budget for myself, but because I wasn't seeing how much money was being subtracted from my budget, in my head I was like, oh, I have $300 to spend each month on like, you know, stupid shit or whatever. But because I never thought to subtract like, oh, I spent $50 at Target, I only have $250 now. I was like, oh yeah, I probably have around $300 or something, I don't know. And so I would just keep spending and spending. And then at the end of the month, it would be like $500 I had spent on stuff. And I was like, okay, I need to like fix this. And so, but I created a budget tracker, like a finance tracker, and that's like really helped me like stay on track. Starting January, I managed to like kind of stay under budget, or like only slightly over budget, just a little bit, which is still an improvement.
Yeah, I think like creating a realistic budget based on like what you know about yourself is helpful. If you just keep setting like a really low budget for yourself because that's the person you want to be and then you keep going over it, I feel like that's just really sad. And then you just don't feel any motivation to like get better because you're always like, well, that's just how it is.
Yeah. Another tip that I have is to create a wish list of things that you want. This is like a tip that I saw from like a YouTuber or something probably, where they were like, oh yeah, whenever I want something, I just put it on a list and I don't buy it immediately, like as soon as I see it. So I put it on the list, I put like how much it costs, and then, you know, it's like there so that I remember that it's something that I wanted and I can like start thinking about saving for it or like try and fit it somewhere in like my budget. But sometimes it helps because you see something and it's like attractive to you at the time, but like when you come back to it like a few weeks or like a month later, you're like, why did I want this? It's kind of dumb, like I don't need it. So it's helpful to just have a place to put the things that you want but like don't necessarily need to have. I also like it because for birthdays or like Christmas and stuff, I mean, like with Jenny and I, we don't like try and surprise each other with like thoughtful gifts or anything. We're just like, what do you want? And so, you know, whenever people ask me what I want, I could like just go back to my wish list of things and like be like, what do I want that I wouldn't necessarily spend on myself? Because usually whenever people are like, oh, what do you want for your birthday, all of a sudden you're like, I don't want anything.
Wait, that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
What other tips you have?
Like buying with intention. So I have a shopping trip planned with a friend for next month. It was actually supposed to be this month, and I was planning on getting Doc Martens for that, but they pushed it to next month, and so I ended up getting the Doc Martens anyway. I had already planned for it. I was really looking forward to it, and so I got them. But now I don't really know what I want when I go shopping with her. I know we're gonna go to Madewell because she really likes Madewell. And so when I was getting my Doc Martens, I also like popped into Madewell just to see what they were selling and kind of get an idea of like what things I might want at that point. I don't really know yet, but I was thinking of like maybe getting some jewelry or something small.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah, I guess like the wish list also comes into play here because you kind of know what things that you want, and so you can buy them when you have a shopping trip planned or something.
Yeah, actually, that was a tip from Audrey Coyne. She has a really cool YouTube channel on finding your personal style, and I think she has like a wish list of items she would like, and they're non-specific. They're things like a really well-fitting blazer, or like shoes that are comfortable enough to walk in but stylish enough to wear with dresses, like stuff like that. And having like that list for her is like a true north, and that's kind of like her way of buying with intention, because then like when she does have like a shopping trip, or when she has like extra budget in her clothing area, she can basically buy things that she knows that she's been thinking about for a while and will probably be a good purchase.
Yeah, because like I've noticed with clothes, I have a lot of like t-shirts and stuff, and so I've been thinking about like, oh, I really want like more structured pieces. Another tip that I have is like thinking about the utility of what you're buying, like how much are you going to use it, or like where that thing like costs per use, or like where are you going to put it, do you have the space? We also kind of talked about this in like a previous section, but creating a spending fund so that you've already allocated that money for going out and like having a nice time, so you don't need to feel guilty when you go out and spend that because you already know that it's within your budget. I started saving up for like vacation a few years ago. Like I wanted to have a vacation fund, even though I didn't obviously have anywhere to go because of the pandemic. But yeah, we're planning on going to New York soon, and it's been really nice having that because I don't have to feel stressed about being like, oh, how am I gonna afford this trip to New York? I have the money.
Super good tips. For my tips, I've separated them out into two sections. So one is external work, so things that you can do in terms of like your habits or what tools you use to to keep on your spending and your saving, or consuming and your conserving goals. And then the other set of tips I have are more so like internal work, because I found that there was a point in my life where I was able to save a lot of money and like not buy as many things just based on like my mindset. So I wanted to share those two. So for my external tips, Lisa mentioned so many of them: creating a wish list, creating like various savings accounts for different activities. So having like a fun savings account where you know you can pull from it whenever you want to like go out or go on vacation. Having like long-term and short-term savings accounts too, in addition to that. One thing that I found super helpful was unsubscribing from all promotional emails and like mute influencers that I follow who I know especially influence me to buy things. So I just went through like an email scrub where I literally unsubscribed from every single store on there because if I really want an item, I can go to the store. And I remember just like always being reminded of new things, new items I could be buying like when I'd get email updates for them. So unsubscribing from those has been helpful.
When it comes into your inbox and they're like, oh, 50% off sale. Like you feel like you have to buy something from them because you're saving money theoretically.
No, exactly. You're always going to spend more money than you would have had you not known about the sale in the first place. Another thing I do, so like Lisa mentioned, I live with my partner, Andrew. We have combined our finances at this point. I know that's like controversial, but we're gonna get married, so whatever. We have a shared budget tracker where we log all of our expenses and all of our savings goals. So how much we want to save each month and then how we're tracking against those in each of our accounts. So every month we have a budget and finances date. We used to like make it a thing where we like buy food and like make it a whole thing, like an actual date and like go through our budget together. But every time we would do that, we'd feel bad because we saw how much we overspent in our eating out category. So we stopped doing that, but we still set aside like a date to do that together. We basically just go through all of our expenses and then just like have a check on each other of whether we're mapping out to our long-term goals. Okay, also this is kind of TMI, but I've had my identity stolen twice, which sucked, but honestly it was a blessing in disguise because now it's a habit for me to check all of my bank accounts and all of my credit cards every single week just to make sure that every transaction was actually mine. And so because I go through that weekly check, it's been super easy to just come to that monthly budget date with Andrew and already know exactly where I'm at. And it's also helpful because I'll know like at every week whether I'm on track with my budget for the month. If I already know I spent a ton of money this week, then I'll be more frugal in the next few weeks instead of just having like a surprise at the end of the month. To some people that might make them anxious, but for me, it makes me less anxious because I know that I'll be happier later and that my identity is not stolen.
Yeah.
So those are my external tips. As for internal work, something that has been really beneficial for me is that I need to accept that I can actually have fun, feel pretty, and stay connected to my friends with what I already have and like not have to spend anything. I want to get to a point where I don't want more stuff. And like sometimes I do achieve that. When I lived in my tiny shitty studio, I actually really enjoyed living in it.
It was cute.
Oh, thanks. I tried making it cozy. But yeah, it's like I had to like mind trick myself into thinking like this is enough. But eventually I got to a point where I genuinely, my heart felt like I had enough, and like practicing gratitude, as corny as it sounds, has been really helpful. And then it doesn't lead to binge spending.
It's just like valuing the things that you already have.
Yeah. On another note, I tried a no spend last year and I was successful in that. I only bought necessities for 6 months, like from January until June.
Wow, 6 months.
Yeah, I went through my email history and I did not order anything like in those months that wasn't like a household essential. But then I just did a binge spend after that. Like I moved into my new apartment. I think I spent like in 1 month more than I spent like in the last like year combined. And so I found that like restricting yourself so much and like placing so much of an emphasis on like spending just leads to unhealthy behavior like that, because I was just not spending because I felt like I couldn't, not because I genuinely didn't want anything.
I think I tried to do a no buy 1 month and then there was something that I really wanted and I was like, no, like you're doing a no buy, just wait until the end of the month. And I was like, if you're gonna buy this at the end of the month anyway, just fucking buy it now.
No, no buys don't work. Like we mentioned, buying is okay as long as you're reaching your goals. The last like internal tip that I have is have a long-term savings goal. If the future to you seems so abstract that you don't feel the need to save for it, actually put something concrete in your future. So for me, I would like to buy a house in the next like 5 years. For that to be a reality, I need to start saving now. I can't just start saving in like 5 years because in the Bay Area, a down payment is like $500,000 sometimes. So to me, like saving for that potential future, what I could like, where I could customize my own pantry and like, you know, do all these things that I've always dreamed of, I'm so willing to put aside money for that future self. Another thing is my emergency savings are nowhere near where I'd like them to be, because I anticipate, you know, my family needing financial support in the future. And right now, spending money on like expensive, sustainable clothes, that wouldn't make me happy if my family is like struggling financially. And so like having these like larger goals and like a larger purpose, basically, it could really help with your short-term impulses, at least my short-term impulses.
I think for a while, my family's always like, oh, so when are you going to buy a house? And I'm like, bruh, I don't have like house buying money. And like for a while, I was like, yeah, I mean, that's not going to happen for like years, probably 10 years even at this point. But I was kind of like, I should probably start saving money now and not wait until the year of to like start thinking about saving money for a house. And so like, even though it's not a lot, I've just been like putting $100 a month into that. I'm like, this isn't like nowhere near enough, but at the same time, it's better than nothing.
Feels good to contribute to that future. Like you're building it brick by brick, basically.
Yeah.
You gotta have like something to work for. Like that's the only way you're gonna be motivated to save. To summarize, we hope that you too can critically examine the ways in which media has influenced you and your spending habits, and to reframe your relationship with money so you're no longer just bound to that dichotomy of spending versus saving, but also like investing in the life that will truly nourish you and conserve enough for very human emergencies that will most likely happen in your life.
And also just like having a healthier relationship with your money in general and not feeling guilty when inevitably there's like going to be something that you really want but don't really need. But like, you know, we're only human. We don't really know anything either. We're still figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. You got this, whoever you are listening.
Thanks for listening to Internet Aesthetic. The music for this podcast is Rose Ornamental by Blue Dot Sessions. If you enjoyed listening, you can find us on Instagram at net.aesthetic or leave us a message on our website at internetaestheticpod.com. We hope you join us again next week. Bye!
Bye, Lisa!